Welcome to Cannabis Health Radio, a podcast where we share stories from people around the world who are using cannabis as medicine. The information is meant to raise awareness about the health benefits of cannabis, but should not be taken as medical advice. Now, here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome to Cannabis Health Radio, the 2024 edition. I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
Most people know what multiple sclerosis is, but I suspect most people do not know the tragic side effects of the drugs given to people who have MS. Our guest today was diagnosed with MS and in 2013 was given a drug to help her, but it caused her liver to fail 4 years later. And joining us from Virginia to tell her story is Tamara Netzel. Before we get into your story, Tamara, when you were given the drug for your MS, did the doctor tell you of its side effects?
No, I knew nothing about the side effects of these drugs. I think at that time I was blindly, you know, I just blindly followed whatever the doctor said, you know, okay, they're the experts, you know, and I really, you know, when the drug had done that, I think that that was a wake-up call for me as a patient to educate myself and be on top of my own health.
Right. Now, let's go back to the beginning. When did your MS symptoms start?
So I had started symptoms probably back in 2011. And it was 2010, 2011. And I had, I had woken up one morning. I was a school teacher. And so I woke up one morning, had two, you know, me and my husband, and I have two kids. They had all left the house for some reason. I can't remember why, but I was the only one in the house. And I woke up and the entire room was spinning. And it wouldn't stop spinning. I couldn't walk. I had to crawl on my hands and knees to get to the phone to call anybody. Shortly thereafter, I lost all sight in my left eye. And my right eye, I'm sorry, my right eye. And, you know, there was all kinds of strange symptoms going on. I went through the medical system, went to my primary, went to the emergency room first, you know, then my primary doctor, but it was just a long road. It took 3 years for them to diagnose me with MS, even after when you first, the symptoms.
When you first went to the delivery room, or delivery room, when you first went to the delivery room, when you first went to the emergency room, what did they say to you about these symptoms you were exhibiting?
You know, they... That was my first experience with MS, but it turned out, you know, to be, I would have things like that happen to me on, and I made many visits to the emergency room, but they just kind of slough it off as, well, we don't know. We just don't know. It was a lot of, we don't know. And I had even, you know, brushed it off, you know, because they weren't telling me anything over time. And I was just resorting to, we just don't know what's happening, you know, until an eye doctor noticed something in my eyes. And he noticed that I had something that was very common to MS, which is called optic neuritis. And that was an attack on my optic nerve, which was the reason why I was, you know, I had gone temporary blind in my right eye. And that's a common thing with MS. And it took several doctors to kind of put it together and be like, okay, all right, well, we think it's MS. But what's kind of frustrating for the whole experience was that it wasn't enough. Those symptoms were not enough. And even though in my, you know, in my heart, I kind of had thought, okay, I do have MS, but it's just a matter of proving it. The protocol at the time for the doctors were that you have to have two relapses, you know, until they'll diagnose you. And that held me back from treatment for years, you know, and just because, you know, you can't get this diagnosis until you have had space and time in between relapses. Meanwhile, you know, you think about the patient, I'm suffering, you know, and I have no answer whatsoever. So
did they not do an MRI these numerous times that you went in? Because that would have given you a diagnosis right there.
Of course. So with MS, what many people may not know is you get brain lesions on your brain, lesions on your brain. And I had an MRI. I had several MRIs that showed that I had lesions on my brain. And it's, you know, they still could not diagnose because the rules, basically the protocol had said, yes, you can have lesions, but we need to see you actively in a relapse. Like, we need to see it, you know, which is kind of cruel in a way, you know, you think, for getting a diagnosis, because then I was not getting treatment at all either. Yeah, that was very much a wake up call for me when then 4 years ago, 4 years after that, this is when my liver failed. Okay.
Yeah, but you were given drugs to treat your MS.
Right. So eventually I got the diagnosis, and, you know, I thought that was, you know, I was on the road to really managing my disease. And, you know, that was back in 2013. I was finally diagnosed and given the MS drug. And I was, you know, really working on my health. I had started, you know, really reading up on my disease, on multiple sclerosis. And I was really happy because I thought, you know, I was a school teacher. I was at the prime of my life, you know, teaching more than 10 years as a middle school teacher. And I had my master's and I had my national board certification really into my career, you know, and getting a diagnosis of MS at age 43 is a shock. And I think a lot of people need to know that this is a disease you're not born with, that you can get into your, you know, you can be middle-aged and be diagnosed with this, not having any clue that you had it beforehand.
Tamara, I was looking up on the internet some of the side effects of MS drugs. Now, what was the drug you were taking?
So the first drug that they prescribed me was called Gilenya, with a G, Gilenya.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of these drugs, you know, I'm not going to pronounce them, but because, quite frankly, I can't. There's one drug here, it says, a potentially fatal brain infection. That's what it can cause. Mm-hmm. Another drug says the drug may increase the risk of infections and cancer. And the next drug is therapy with this drug may increase the risk of autoimmune conditions. And then the next drug, it says side effects may include heart damage and certain blood cancers. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, Jesus, I mean, you've got MS, you're looking for some type of solution. These aren't solutions. These are aggravating your long-term health and causing you problems in the future, which it did to you because it caused you liver failure.
That's correct.
Tell us about that, how that was discovered.
So, as I said, you know, I really felt like I was managing it because I was finally on a therapy. No other side effects in the four years, you know, I was on this drug. Somebody should have been monitoring my liver at the time, which nobody was. And for whatever reason, after 4 years, here I am. I had been working on my nutrition. I was 8 months into training for my first marathon when suddenly I feel like my whole entire body. I woke up one morning and I felt like my body from head to toe was on fire. Mm-hmm. Like I had the worst sunburn from everywhere, all over my body. And so here goes another emergency room visit. And that is kind of the course of MS. People with MS, we make a lot of emergency visits and they really don't have a clue, but you still kind of have to go because you never really know. And I think I had been at that time so over going to the emergency room, but it's a series of, okay, my husband talks to me, you got to go, because this is the way you have to do, you know, you have to let them know. And I'm thankful I did, because I was ready for them to send me home like they had done, you know, dozens of times before. Oh, you know, we don't know, go to your primary doctor, la, la, la. But then here, lo and behold, it was kind of scary, because here I am. I was at Walter Reed Medical Center. And if you know where that is, that's near DC. That's where the president goes to. That's the hospital the president goes to. Mm-hmm. My husband retired from the military. And so at that time we were up in Alexandria, Virginia. And so our hospital to go to, you know, as a military spouse, I went to Walter Reed Medical Center. So I go to their emergency room, and then suddenly, you know, thinking they're going to send me home, five doctors in white coats walk into my small little room and scaring the heck out of me. And I'm just like, why are you all here? And they're like, yeah, we only get a case like this. We get them, but we get them like once every 5 years. Your liver enzymes are through the roof. Mm. Your liver enzymes are supposed to be around 100, just to give you an idea. Mine were in the thousands. And And so they're like, we have to admit you, et cetera, et cetera. And over time, then they determined through all the tests, they did lots of tests, they determined it was the MS drug that caused this.
And so you stopped taking the drug?
Correct. So, and here's the, yeah, so here's the irony of that is I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to get some help, more help now or something, or there's something more of a course to do here. Mm-hmm. The only answer is, oh, okay, that drug didn't work. What other one do you want to choose? They asked me, which other MS drug would you like?
Did they explain to you the options? Did they explain what the side effects with each of these and what they felt would work best for you or anything like that? Or did they just say, pick a number?
They said, look at all of these. They gave me some pamphlets, you know, and you know, there are some of these drugs. One had come out brand new, right? And it was the first infusion. Everything else had been like a shot or a pill, you know? So it was the first infusion, Ocrevus, and that was the next one that they offered me. And I was kind of excited about it because I was like, oh, it's new, it's different, and this and that. But that one damaged me as well. And the subsequent one after that damaged me as well.
When you say damaged, in what way?
Yeah, so after my liver had failed, the Ocrevus had set me into a state of my immune system. I had like no immune system, it seemed. I was getting every infection. At one point, I had 8 infections all at once, strange infections, scalp infection, mouth infections, things that are odd, you know. And the answer, you know, I go to my doctor, I'm like, oh, this one's not working, you know, like, or if it's working, it's causing all these other things. And he's just like, well, it's the same answer. What other drug would you like to try? Let's try another one. And so I tried a third one. And, you know, that Ocrevus also, it caused nerve damage in my neck. I have a cranial nerve that my 8th cranial nerve, the one that goes underneath your tongue and down your neck, has gotten damaged because of the Ocrevus. And so over the different tests that they had done, they had determined that that had caused that. So then I went on another drug, which was called Tecfidera. And that one, so those brain lesions, all this time, you know, none of these drugs had kept me from having any more brain lesions. But then on Tecfidera, I got 2 more brain lesions. And so then that drug didn't work. I was at my rope's end, and then I'm happy to say that I, was brave enough to, I went to Mexico and got a stem cell transplant. At that time. So far, I'm 4 years after the stem cell transplant and no new brain lesions and no progression of my MS.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Ocrevus that you were telling me about, I just have to move the cat out of the way. The Ocrevus that you were referring to, it says here, the drug may increase the risk of infections and cancer.
Yes.
So you go. What's going through your mind with all of this that's happening to you? You're not getting much help from the medical community. You've got MS. Your liver has failed. And what was your state of mind at the time when all this was going on?
It was pretty crazy. It was pretty crazy. But I have to say that cannabis was a lifesaver at that time. So I was introduced to cannabis after the liver failure. That's what brought me to cannabis. That was the time it brought me to cannabis. And if I were to say, cannabis made me brave. There's many things I would not have done in my health story if I did not have cannabis. I told you I had a stem cell transplant. Mm-hmm. I would not have been able to get through that or even have the guts to go to try and have that done. I believe that cannabis helped me get there. Cannabis helps me every day, but it has helped me through so many health, issues I've had.
Yeah. So in what form are you or were you taking cannabis?
So at the time, initially, so I was a skeptic. I was really strong skeptic.
Join the club, Tamara.
I mean, I was, a middle school student, middle school teacher, of course. In middle school students, I had to deal with them getting in trouble for it in lockers and things like that. So I was exposed to it. So I kind of had a negative, I had a negative thing, negative opinion of it. Not, never thought it was a health, something that would ever help me. Never believed all the propaganda, and mm-hmm. Of course, being a military wife too, that was just nowhere in my world at all.
How did you first get involved in this then?
So after that liver failure, I was in a lot of pain. That brought on a lot of brought on a lot more pain there was a teacher's aide who knew about CBD oil at the time. I didn't even know what that meant or even what CBD was. This is 2016, 2017, if you will, and before the farm bill and, this explosion with hemp and cannabis. But it was back at, I had no idea what that, I just thought it was some supplement that she was giving me. She's like, no, here, you need to just try this. Or you need to, so I did. After really kind of out of spite, because she wouldn't let me alone with it. She's just like, I just really feel like I need to help you, mm-hmm. And I'm thankful for that because it made me curious. I do have a great bit of curiosity, being an educator, and I do believe in learning, lifelong learning, but it really kind of made me curious about it. Then I started researching and I thought, and it was CBD oil. And then I was like, my husband one time, he's like, I think that's, we had put it together. That's cannabis. And that might be illegal what you have, and I thought it was just a vitamin supplement or something, mm-hmm. Let me back up a minute. I felt an effect. I felt like it was working. It had done something, and that really surprised me because I really didn't think it was going to do anything. And then I kind of got defensive when my husband had said, that might be illegal. And then I was on a path that kind of set me on a path that, I'm going to find some people that are working to make this legal then, that's what I'm going to do. So that's what I did. I went and, searched, and there was a woman, a mother, whose child has epilepsy, and she was speaking in Maryland. And I, here it is, a couple hours away, and I was like, I'm going to this, I'm going to go listen to her. I want to go talk to her. And one thing led to another. She asked me to join them in Richmond to speak about, you know, the benefits of cannabis and try to move the legislation at that time. So at that time, CBD oil in my state was only legal for epilepsy patients. So those mothers had worked very hard to get that. They had worked several years to get that point. They did not have, you know, they wanted to expand it to THC and to adults, mainly adults, you know, and so they asked me to join them. I started to do some speaking, just kind of told my story, and they were actually working on getting on a national TV show, Dateline. And I just happened to be in the right place at the right time, I guess, and they asked me to be on it.
Tamara, can I ask if you just used all CBD? Did you just use all CBD and no THC?
At that point, yes. So, and part of that was, yes. So at that point, it really was just that, but I was kind of, okay, so my doctor, this is interesting, Walter Reed Medical Center, you know, these are all military doctors here, you know, and my doctor, I think back on it and I just kind of chuckle because he did his very best to kind of pique my interest, but not reveal too much. those tests I told you, they did all these tests on me when my liver failed. I looked through them. I still have the paper, but I had never seen the word cannabinoids before. They tested me for cannabinoids back then. And I was like, you know, I always refer back to them. It's like, they tested me for cannabinoids. And then I asked my doctor, I was like, what's this? What's cannabinoids? Oh, you know, you might benefit from cannabinoid therapy is what he says at the time. And I had no idea what that meant.
Tamara, often, you know, when people are listening to our shows, the information that they're really looking for is what did you take? How much did you take? How did you do it? What form did you do it in? Could you share some of that with the listeners, please?
Sure. Yes. So with MS, your symptoms can vary, but they're very much like, first, I feel like I have to describe what we feel. A lot of the general pain that you feel is nerve pain. And I describe it like your elbow, you know, your funny bone. If you've ever hit your funny bone, you ever hit it really hard, you know, like knocked it on a table or whatever. That sensation, we feel that everywhere. Like that's the pain we feel all the time. It's a nerve, like, you know, buzzing feeling. My pain is primarily in my hands and my arms. My hands, and you need your hands as a teacher a lot, you know, and, you know, the pain just would get to me. But the CBD oil initially that I started taking then was just under my tongue, a few drops. And I started to feel that buzzing, like painful feeling, that it just like a wash over my hands and arms, a warm, like comfortable feeling.
Like your husband's arms around you.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, it was a warm, comfortable feeling, you know.
Now, did you start to take THC at some point?
Yes. So when I asked my doctor about the cannabinoids and why they tested me for it, he then led me to, he actually prescribed me Marinol at the time. Marinol.
Synthetic.
Synthetic THC. And then I didn't, of course, I didn't know what that was when he prescribed it, but found out because I always research, you know, and then I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, you know. And the more and more I learned, I was like, I need to be getting the actual plant. That's where I had, you know, in my mind, I was like, I need to get the actual plant because I put it together. MS is an autoimmune disease, but it affects the brain and spinal cord so much. And when I learned about CB1 receptors and CB2 receptors and what they affect, I had made the decision that, okay, I need all of that. I don't just need, you know, what the CB2 receptors affect. I do need THC. Mm-hmm. Because that is effect, and from what I understand, it's, you know, in the brain and spinal cord, those receptors. So I felt like at that time I was, you know, I'm in Virginia. It's actually Northern Virginia. And marijuana had been legal in DC at that time. So I had sought out how to get medicine for myself.
So what do you take on a daily basis now?
I actually consume in all, like a lot of the forms. The most effective, I think, for me is anything edible, because with MS, it's all over your body. And it is I think the edibles give you that warm feeling that I'm looking for with that nerve pain. Mm-hmm. But I do supplement then with inhalation. I have a vape, and occasionally also smoke the plant. So,
yeah, I saw a picture of you on your Facebook page. It says, "I'm a blunt person."
Yes, the sweatshirt. Yes, I got that in New York. That was, yeah, I'm a blunt person, but I'm a blunt person.
Yeah, that's right. How would you describe your MS today, say, compared to 5-10 years ago?
Good question. I feel like, you know, now the difference is I can manage it. That's what I love about cannabis, is that it made me brave to be an empowered patient, like to take control of my own health, you know, and know that I can affect it. And I think that's really powerful, because I think that, you know, back then I felt helpless and I wanted the doctors to help me. You know, I wanted them to help me. Nobody was going to help me, you know, like it just felt very helpless. And I think that, you know, it's made me brave to be able to say, no, I can do things to help myself, you know, and advocate for myself.
Mm-hmm. Your symptoms are a lot better, I suspect.
Yes, they are, because I can, you know, manage them and I know what to do. Okay. You know, and I think the stem cell transplant helped. I mean, because it stopped the progression. MS is a progressive disease and it there's no cure for it. Mm-hmm. It just keeps getting worse. And, I feel, you know, it is an experimental treatment. But I'm very proud of having to do that, because I believe now I get my MRIs, my brain MRIs every year at NIH, so National Institute of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, if you're familiar with it. And, and because I signed up for a clinical trial. Now, when I did the stem cell transplant in Mexico, that's a really, you know, bold move, because, you know, it, very few patients do that. It's not really accessible in the U.S. That's why I went to Mexico for it. But I believe that, so with a stem cell transplant, I mean, I had chemo and everything, lost my hair and everything. And the idea is that MS is that, you know, it being an autoimmune disease, the idea is that they reset your immune system. And then the stem cells, they give you back your own stem cells. So before they give you the chemo, they harvest, they took my own stem cells. They preserved them, and then they gave me chemo, you know, to reset my immune system. Then they gave me back my own stem cells. And the idea is to reset the immune system. Hopefully it forgets it has MS. Mm. Now, I believe that so far with, you know, I've been going for 4 years now to NIH to get the best brain MRIs that you can get, because I really wanted to know. I didn't want to just be guessing, you know. I wanted the best information, since I had taken this risk to get this treatment. And there's really no doctor following me. I have a cancer doctor in in Virginia here that I go to once a year after my stem cell transplant, but nobody in the U.S. was, no doctor was involved with it. So it's a lot of, you know, trying to make sure, you know, all of that is on me. But I believe in my heart, that because there has not been any new brain lesions, my symptoms, what's great is I haven't gotten any new symptoms. The symptoms, what's great is I can manage the symptoms I have. What's crazy about MS is you just keep piling on the symptoms, piling on, and you get frustrated because you're just like, when's it ever end? I learned how to manage with this symptom. I got it. Oh, we got a new one, you know?
Yeah, it just keeps getting worse. It's a snowball effect. So as a result of what you've done and in taking cannabis, am I correct in saying your symptoms have leveled off?
Yes.
And the pain which you were experiencing has also diminished. Is that?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's fantastic what you've done. I mean, you've taken your health into your own hands, which a lot of people don't. I mean, when a lot of people who are diagnosed with, say, cancer or some other disease which threatens their life, you get very, very scared and you'll do anything to kind of continue living. And the conventional system, a lot of people will shy away from cannabis. And but those people who have embraced it, we have found in over the 400 interviews we've done, those people who've changed their diet and embraced cannabis are the ones that thrive in the future. I mean, we've interviewed over 20 people who have had brain cancer, and only one person has failed to survive. And one of the fellows, I think he lives, Jason Berger, I believe, lives in Missouri. He had a very, very rare form of brain cancer. And he's still alive 16 years later. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable what cannabis can do. And even your doctor in Walter Reed talked about the endocannabinoid system and cannabinoids. I would suspect most doctors don't know what the endocannabinoid system is. But I commend you for what you've done. I think it's really remarkable. And you are a blunt person. It's great. Thanks for doing this, Tamara. It's really a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tamara.
If I may, I feel like I need to say that cannabis made me brave as a patient, but I speak out for cannabis law in my state as well. And a lot of and it's made me brave to be able to do that. I feel like my background is not necessarily, you know, who you might think, you know, that's involved with cannabis, but I feel like I can speak, you know, to my legislators. I created a nonprofit that tells the stories of people who have been criminalized for marijuana. It's called Cruel Consequences, Portraits of Misguided Law. And I'm pretty proud of being able to do that work because I interviewed over, you know, like 20 people who had been criminalized and their actual stories of seeking cannabis for medicine. A lot of them are medical stories. But I use those stories because I got frustrated. You know, I started doing advocacy in my legislature, and I got tired of the common story that they'd say, even if they were for or against, you know, the guy in the street corner, and they'd be fictional stories. So that's what inspired me to do that. And I think cannabis has inspired me to, you know, do a lot of great things in my life. So
yeah, good for you. And if you know of any people who want to do an interview with us, send them our way.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Tamara.
Thank you so much, Tamara.
Thank you.
Before we go, I want to let our listeners know that you can help us spread the word about the amazing, often life-saving health benefits of cannabis. just by sharing the podcast, writing a review, or rating us. We very much appreciate the help of everyone who's done that already. And we really like the 5-star ratings. We'd also like to thank those of you who support the show by making a one-time donation or a monthly donation on our Patreon page, which you can do for as little as $5 a month. It helps to keep us running. You'll find out how to do that on our website, cannabishealthradio.com. Thank you for your support. It means so much to us. And we'll be back again next week with another episode of Cannabis Health Radio.
Thanks for listening to Cannabis Health Radio. For more information and to search previous podcasts, visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com. Subscribe so you don't miss new episodes. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This podcast is made possible by donations from our listeners. If you found the information helpful, please consider making a donation in any amount through our website. You can also help us share our message by leaving a review on your podcast listening platform. We are very grateful for your support. Thank you. Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
99.9% of our DNA is identical. It's a 0.1% that truly makes us different and unique. And that's what the show is about. Find out that 0.1% about your favorite guests. Find out what music they like, their first cannabis experience, and even what their room looked like growing up. But more importantly, or as important, their journey. Learn what makes them unique on Everything Is Personal.